Home builders scale back their future plans.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. This morning, the government told us construction of new homes was up in April, but new building permits were seriously down. So what is housing telling us about where the economy's headed? That is coming up. First, the stock market has just started the trading day, so where's Wall Street? The Dow's up 87 points this morning at 10,712, while the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are up just about the same amount, almost 1%. Home Depot this morning improved its profit forecast for the year. Stocks are solidly higher in both Europe and Asia. Now let's talk about this morning's top news with analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, with us live from St. Louis. Morning, Julie.
Morning, Bill.
So explain this, Julie. Construction of new homes is up, but new building permits falls sharply. What is going on?
Well, again, it's a question of class here. Housing starts, especially the ones coming out right now, they're up because of high-end construction. The rich are back in, building those new houses again. But new permits are falling again because of middle-class job concerns. There's a huge inventory of used houses out there. And there's another alarming trend, strategic defaults. Those are the borrowers who are underwater on their mortgages. They can afford to pay, but they choose not to. So more used houses are going to be coming into the market again.
So strategic defaults, they're not paying their mortgages, so they're spending that extra money they have?
And that's showing up in retail sales today, up about 5% month over month. Really good news. But the jeer again is, who's spending? The rich. Pent-up demand. They're not embarrassed to carry the Saks and Bloomingdale's bags here. And the strategic defaulters are out spending the money that they should be paying on their mortgages, only in retail sales. Middle class, still very cautious. Low income, they're buying more, but they're buying necessities, and that's low profit margin area. So spending is up, but two-thirds of our economy is depending on consumer growth. It's nourishing the economy, but we're not flourishing.
So this class situation, I want to pick up on that. Walmart said this morning that this current quarter looks a little dicey. Does that tie into what you're talking about?
Exactly. The middle class, again, is very cautionary. They're only buying when there's really good value out there. And the low income is buying more, but they're strictly sticking to those low profit margin things, the necessity, the food, the cleaning fluids, you know, things like that. Those are the things that they're buying. They're not going for the high profit margin things. So are we recovering? Yes, but we're certainly not flourishing.
Certainly not. Julie Neiman, Smith Moore & Company. Thank you.
You bet.
As oil continues to gush from the leak in the Gulf of Mexico, more hearings on Capitol Hill today. And on the agenda today, the government's role in the mess. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar will testify before a couple of Senate committees. So will Coast Guard officials. Marketplace's Elisa Roth tells us what we might hear.
The senators are going to try to figure out the government's part in the BP spill, so there'll probably be a lot of questions about regulations and whether the relationship between the government and industry has been too cozy. Barbara Shook is the Houston bureau chief for the Energy Intelligence Group. She says the committees will want answers to all kinds of questions.
Why the regulations that exist weren't enforced more strictly, and whether a need exists for more stringent regulations.
Yesterday, President Obama said he's putting together an independent commission to investigate the spill. It'll be similar to panels that have examined disasters in the past. There was one after the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded and one that looked at what happened at Three Mile Island. Shook says that kind of panel's a good idea as long as you get the right kind of people sitting on it.
You have to make sure that the people represent the right disciplines. You have to have petroleum engineers. You have to have oceanographers. You can't have theoretical physicists on this panel.
Shook also says she expects the government will propose a new agency to oversee offshore drilling. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Speaking of oil, when you hear about Americans importing energy, you probably think of oil from foreign countries. But a new report out today shows how some U.S. states are spending lots of money importing energy from other U.S. states in the form of coal. The report is from the energy advocacy group, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner tells us more.
The Union of Concerned Scientists found that 11 states each spend more than $1 billion a year importing coal from other states or abroad. Georgia, North Carolina, and Texas are the biggest spenders. Some Midwestern states import, too. Barbara Fries co-authored today's report.
In Ohio, nearly three-quarters of the coal that they burn in their power plants came from elsewhere.
Fries contends importers should invest some of that money instead on energy efficiency and renewables. Mark Durbin at Ohio's First Energy says his utility is starting to do that. They plan to convert one of their 6 Ohio coal plants.
Our goal is to have that plant burning 100% biomass, and we're working to make that happen.
First Energy has no choice. Ohio is now demanding that 12% of the state's energy come from renewables by 2025. Half those renewable sources must come from Ohio. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, May 18th at Marketplace.org. Governors and state legislatures from coast to coast are having to make some tough budget choices this year. But perhaps nowhere will the budget fight be felt more than in New Jersey. The state's Republican governor, Chris Christie, came to power this year promising steep cuts across the board. And as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, he is giving the voters exactly that.
Governor Christie wants to close a gap of at least $10 billion without raising taxes, as he told state lawmakers when he announced his plan.
We have the worst unemployment in the region and the highest taxes in America, and that is no coincidence.
The governor proposes cutting $820 million from aid to schools, the biggest single item in the budget, and he is refusing to raise taxes on people who earn more than $400,000 a year.
I mean, his poll numbers are terrible. But the fact is, whether you like him or not, he's doing exactly what he said he would do.
Steve Adubato is a New Jersey political analyst with Newark Public Radio.
People are finding out that Chris Christie is governing and he doesn't give a damn whether he gets elected again. That's hard for people to deal with.
Especially Democratic lawmakers who control both houses of the state legislature. Adubato says it's likely they won't agree to the governor's cuts by the June 30th deadline.
I don't believe there will be a budget. I believe the government will shut down in New Jersey. There will be no longer an ability to pay state workers. Parks will close. DMV will close. And you're going to have a government shutdown in New Jersey on July 1st.
A potential crisis that Adubato says should serve as a warning to the other 49 states.
It's so corny to say the eyes of the country around New Jersey, but they should be because this is the test case for how it could be done.
At Pleasantdale Elementary School in West Orange, students are learning about their place in the nation, and they're about to learn firsthand what funding cuts will mean to them. Everything from after-school programs to school lunches to class size will be affected. Teacher Nick Galanti says the kids may be singing, but among adults in town, things are getting downright hostile.
52, 53 years, I've never seen it like this. People arguing at the post office, up at ShopRite. I've never seen it this way. It's like a different place.
Or at least a place that has found a different solution to problems that are the same in state after state. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
European leaders meet today to talk about cracking down on hedge funds. The United States dominates the hedge fund industry. It has already come out strongly against the European proposal. From London, Stephen Beard reports that a general agreement has been reached by European ministers.
U.S. officials say if the planned regulations take effect, the U.S. hedge fund industry will suffer badly. It'll mean American funds will find it much tougher to make money in Europe. The proposed rules are restrictive. Hedge fund managers would have to reveal details of their investment positions. There would be limits on how much they can borrow and on how much they can pay their staff. Ian Morley is with the Allen Bridge hedge fund consulting firm. He says the Europeans are unfairly blaming hedge funds for the financial crisis.
It wasn't the hedge funds that created the subprime loans, and it wasn't the hedge funds that mismanaged the Greek economy. We simply took positions in the market where we said, this has gone ridiculously out of control. And as a result of that, we warned the world about it, and people don't like bad news.
The UK is home to 80% of European hedge funds, and it also opposes the plan. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You don't see many beer and liquor ads on primetime TV because the big broadcast networks and the alcohol industry have rules to limit them. But a report out today says digital media have become a, quote, wild west for alcohol ads. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich has that.
When Smirnoff launched the drink Raw Tea, it hit the viral jackpot with a music video called Tea Party.
We're gonna turn it out with our parents' riches. We'll serve Smirnoff raw tea and finger sandwiches.
5 million YouTube hits. The problem, says the Center for Digital Democracy, is you don't know who's watching. The alcohol industry's voluntary rule says 70% of people who see your ad have to be legal. But on YouTube, Facebook, and cell phones,
so much of this activity is unmeasured.
David Jernigan runs the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth at Johns Hopkins. He says viral marketing campaigns, by definition, mean companies can't control if kids see their ads. And the games and contests in online alcohol ads
are designed to create an immersive experience, deep and rich engagement with the brand.
The report asks the Federal Trade Commission to investigate online alcohol spending and publish the results. The Distilled Spirits Council says it applies the same rigorous guidelines across all media. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
For the first time ever, the U.S. Census Bureau is counting same-sex couples who self-identify as married, even in states where gay marriage is illegal. From Austin, Texas, KUT's Nathan Bernier reports on what that information could mean for marketers.
On a quiet residential street in Austin, Kermit Johns runs a small investment advisory firm. He's been with his male partner for 36 years, and when Johns received his census form, he marked married, even though he lives in a state where gay marriage is banned.
I did that because I'm an honest guy, and I certainly don't have any secrets from the United States government. I'm a taxpayer like everybody else, so I answered honestly.
In this census, he'll be counted as married. That was not the case in 2000. When gay people checked the box for married on their census forms 10 years ago, it was changed by the Census Bureau to unwedded couple. Linda Golden is a marketing professor at the University of Texas. She says being able to count gay couples who self-identify as married will be gold for advertisers.
You can use it to find out, are there enough people to make it worth spending the money to market to this geographical area? That in itself is huge.
Well, I think it's interesting. If we look at it from 10 years ago to today, one thing I think you'll find is that there'll be many, many more same-sex partners in rural America and suburban America.
David Paisley is with Community Marketing, Inc., based in San Francisco. His firm targets gay consumers. He says for marketers like him, it's important not only to know where gay people live, but also the kinds of relationships they have with each other.
So, for example, if I was looking to sell, say, luxury cruises, I'd probably be targeting couples.
And the census information will tell marketers which communities have a larger percentage of gays and lesbians in long-term relationships. But marketers won't be able to get their hands on this information until next year when raw census data is released. In Austin, I'm Nathan Bernier for Marketplace.
And finally, the government released President Obama's financial disclosure forms yesterday. He's a millionaire thanks to his best-selling books, but we knew that. The real news was about his dog. The president values Bo at $1,600, which for a hypoallergenic Portuguese water dog gift from Ted Kennedy really doesn't sound like that much money. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.